Hello, I'm Father Ron Shibley, rector at St. John Chrysostom Anglican Church, the host parish of the Anglican Internet Church, and I welcome you to episode 6 for the Holy Bible, the New Testament, a Bible study series on the Anglican Hour. In episode 6, my focus will be on some unique features of St. Matthew's account and some of the most memorable sayings and quotations that are unique to St. Matthew's Gospel. We begin with comments on the long form of the Lord's Prayer, which is slide 66 in the video version. There are two versions of the Lord's Prayer in the New Testament, one each in the Gospels of St. Matthew and St. Luke. The version in St. Matthew's Gospel in Matthew 6, 9-13 is called the long version because it includes a final verse which echoes St. Matthew's theme of kingdom, and the verse is, "For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever." The kingdom line repeats a prayer found in the Didache, which is Greek for the teachings, thought to have been published before St. Matthew's Gospel appeared. It is possible that the final line was added in later manuscripts and that it was not part of the original version of the Gospel of St. Matthew. In Anglican usage, both forms are used. However, the shorter Lucan form was the preferred version in the First Book of Common Prayer. The next unique feature is the long form of the Beatitudes in chapter 5, verses 1 to 12, which is slide 67 in the video version. St. Matthew's version of the Sermon on the Mount includes 8 declarations or definitions concerning the state of blessedness. The version found in St. Luke's Gospel in Luke 6, 20-26 contains only 4 blessings. The real distinguishing difference is the tone and not the length. St. Matthew's account is expressed in distinctly spiritual terms, referring to a blessing to be received in heaven rather than a benefit to be received on earth. Here are just 2 notable examples. St. Matthew refers to a blessing for the poor in spirit, which is an entirely different concept than poor in St. Luke's version, which suggests a lack of earthly wealth or status. St. Matthew's account offers a blessing upon those who, quote, hunger and thirst for righteousness, unquote. A hunger and thirst for righteousness is a quite different concept than the mere lack of sustenance suggested in St. Luke's version. The point is that St. Matthew's Beatitudes deal with the spiritual character of mankind in its relationship to God and not just to any one person's socioeconomic or political status. We turn our attention now to parables that are unique to the Gospel of St. Matthew. This would be slides 68 and 69 in the video version. There are 11 parables found in St. Matthew's Gospel which do not appear in the other 2 synoptic Gospels. Many were addressed only to the disciples after the multitudes had gone away. These examples are the parable of the wheat and the tares in chapter 13, verses 24 to 30, and explained in 36 to 43. The parable of the leaven in 13, 33. The parable of the hidden treasures in 13, 44. The parable of the pearl of great price in 13:45-46, the dragnet in 13:47-50, and the householder, chapter 13, verses 51-52. In slide 69, in the video version, there is the parable of the unforgiving servant in 18, verses 21-35, which includes the famous exchange with St. Peter concerning forgiveness, in which the phrase 70 times 7 is used. The parable of the laborers in the vineyard, also called the parable of the first and the last, which is chapter 20, verses 1 to 16, the faithful servant and evil servant, chapter 24, verses 45 to 51, the parable of the wise and foolish virgins in chapter 25, verses 1 to 13, and the parable of the talents in chapter 25, verses 14 to 29. I also want to call your attention to some memorable quotations in the Gospel of St. Matthew. There are many that are not found in other Gospels. Many of these are the words of Christ, and the ones I'm going to talk about now were in slide 70 in the video version. And as I noted, many of these are words of Christ, generally spoken in less formal settings and in words less sweeping than those said in the Beatitudes. They were said just after the account of the Beatitudes, and they offer a range of advice on daily living. For example, the lessons on murder and adultery in the heart in chapter 5, verses 21 to 30. The rules for divorce in chapter 5, verses 31 to 32. The prohibition concerning swearing, not including legal oaths, in chapter 5, verses 33 to 37, the guidance to go the extra mile in 5:38 to 42, which is based upon Jesus' expansion of a Roman law that required anyone to travel a mile when asked for help by Roman authorities. The advice to love your enemies and bless those who curse you in chapter 5, verses 43 to 47, to do your charitable deeds in secret, chapter 6, verses 1 to 4, to do your fasting in secret, in chapter 6, verses 16 to 17, the latter two of which are a direct criticism of the self-righteousness of the Pharisees, which is in itself a constant theme in the Gospel of St. Matthew. Other advice depicted in the video version in slide 71 are the lesson on the narrow gate, or called the straight gate in the King James Version, versus the broad way in chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. The Orthodox Study Bible, New Testament, and Psalms points out that this advice does not make the same point as a similar quotation found in Luke 13:24, where in St. Luke's context, the reference is to judgment in the end times. St. Matthew's context follows the Hebrew tradition of understanding Psalm 1, often called the Two Ways Psalm. In Psalm 1, the world is divided into the two ways, the godly and the ungodly, or the righteous and the unrighteous, and rules are offered concerning conduct, the famous standeth not, sitteth not, walketh not phrases. Here, instead of the godly and ungodly from Psalm 1, Jesus refers instead to the narrow versus the broad way, saying, wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. Another example, which was featured in slide 72, of instruction, which is chapter 18, verses 15 to 17, concerns confession and discipline in the church, which counsels the resolution of personal disputes within a church community, implying avoidance of courts of law. This lesson includes one of only two sets of the word church in the Gospels. Church is widely used in Acts, in the Epistles, and in Revelation, but the only other use in the Gospels is also in the Gospel of St. Matthew. In chapter 16, verse 18, Jesus refers to my church, unquote. The Greek word, root word here, is ecclesia. It is the Christian equivalent of synagogue. Further examples in the same discourse with the disciples on discipline within the church was pointed out in slide 73, in which Jesus grants them the power of binding and loosing, which is found in chapter 18, verses 18 to 19. Assuredly, I say to you that whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. This grant of authority is similar to the authority to forgive sins granted to the disciples in John 20, verse 23, the scriptural foundation for the sacrament of confession or penance. In the video version on slide 74, we continued in the same discourse with the disciples, but this time in chapter 18, verse 20, where Jesus uses a phrase which is found nowhere else. And some of you listeners may not agree with this interpretation, but it says in this verse, "Where two or three are gathered in my name, I am there in the midst of them." The choice of where and not when in this quote is seen as a validation of the Christian concept of a church as the place where the faithful gather to worship. Other memorable lines are the statement in chapter 10, verses 24 to 26, which was shown on slide 75, that a disciple is not above his teacher, which is found here and in the Gospel of St. John in John 15, verse 20, but not in the Gospels of St. Mark and St. Luke. And in 9:36 to 38, in which is found a preview of the Great Commission, chapter 28, verses 16 to 20, which ends the Gospel of St. Matthew, as well as the Gospels of St. Mark and St. Luke. St. Matthew's account includes this charge to the disciples: "The harvest is truly plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray to the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into the harvest." Although I have mentioned the attacks upon the Pharisees in previous episodes, I can't end a discussion of St. Matthew's Gospel without specifically mentioning the memorable accusation, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites!" And this was the subject of slide 76. That phrase is used in chapter 23 seven times in verses 13, 14, 15, 23, 25, 27, and 29. The endings of the phrase are not the same, but the beginning phrase is always the same. The phrase is used, and others like it, is used repeatedly in chapter 25 to condemn the Hebrew leadership for misleading their people concerning God's laws. Another unique feature of St. Matthew is the four miracles that are found there and nowhere else. And this was in slide 75 in the video, 77 in the video version. These are, in chapter 9, 27 to 30, Jesus' restoration of sight of the two blind men, in which one of the blind men acknowledges Jesus as the Son of David, a message consistent with the kingship theme of the Gospel of St. Matthew. The second example, in 9:32 to 33, is the healing of the mute and demon-possessed man. Example 4, in chapter 17, verses 23 to 27, is the curious story of the payment of the temple tax with the coin found in the mouth of a fish, a backhand way of saying that neither Jesus nor the disciples owed the Hebrew temporal tax, as the temple belonged to Jesus. And finally, number 4, in 27:3 to 10, the account of the fate of Judas, who hangs himself, which is described in a different way in Acts 1, verses 18 and 19. My last topic in this episode and in this discussion of the Gospel of St. Matthew concerns Jesus' final discourse on judgment. And there are several slides in the video version. And these all refer to chapter 25, verses 31 to 37, which is Jesus' final discourse on the theme of judgment based on works. I've included this in a separate category because, although it is in the form of a parable following after the parable of the talents in 25:14-30, it is far more than just a parable. It summarizes the kingship theme of St. Matthew's Gospel, placing it in the context of judgment. The NKJV Study Bible calls St. Matthew's Gospel the Gospel of Judgment. And the setting in this discourse is the Mount of Olives, beginning in Matthew 24, verse 3, and the hearers are the disciples. And the time is just before Passover, in Matthew 26, verse 2, which would be either Tuesday or Wednesday of Holy Week, 1 or 2 days before his betrayal by Judas Iscariot on Maundy Thursday. And the account opens with images consistent with the kingship theme woven into the fabric of St. Matthew's Gospel. In it are several key words which should be familiar to readers of Revelation: Son of Man, glory, angels, heaven, throne, judgment. When the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, and he will sit down on the throne of his glory, all the nations will be gathered before him. That's chapter 26, verses 31-32. The manner of judgment echoes the image of the Good Shepherd, which is found in John chapter 10. It also contains a reference quite familiar in the Hebrew tradition, another characteristic of St. Matthew's Gospel, of the place of honor being on the right hand. In the Nicene Creed, Christians affirm that Jesus sits on the right hand of the Father, from which he will come in judgment. In this account in St. Matthew's Gospel, in verses 26, 32b, and 33, Jesus says that he will, quote, separate them from one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats, and he will set the sheep on the right hand, but the goats on the left. In this discourse, we find next an example of St. Matthew's theme of the life of Jesus as fulfillment of prophecy. And although I've quoted this verse earlier, I use it again now when Jesus says in verse 34, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." The message in this discourse, coming as it did just the day after his condemnation of the narrowness and false righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, who had calculated that there were exactly 613 commandments and not just 10, is that judgment will not be based on the narrow, legalistic conception of righteousness advocated by the Pharisees. Instead, Jesus offers a list of the necessary works which demonstrate faith, examples, feeding the hungry, giving drink to the thirsty, giving shelter for the homeless, clothing the naked, visiting the sick and those in prison. Next in the same discourse, Jesus speaks aloud the doubts of the disciples, and he does so in the Hebrew teaching style of reinforcing an argument by speaking it in two groups of nearly identical verses, here separated by other text. And the text in question is verses 37, 38, and 39, followed by 42, 43, and 44. Jesus answers their doubts with this from verse 40, which was spoken again in verse 45 in nearly identical form. "And the king will answer and say to them, 'Assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these my brethren, you did it to me.'" Twice he spoke the same warning of the fate of those who failed the works test, from verse 41 and repeated in verse 46, in both cases using the right-hand, left-hand symbolism. In verse 40, he says, "Then he will say to those on the left hand, Depart from me, you cursed, into the everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. And in verse 46, and these will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. In episodes 2, 3, 4, 5, and now in 6, I have reviewed the four major themes of St. Matthew and attempted to connect them together: the origin of the name Jesus in the Hebrew tradition, the genealogy of Jesus in the royal line of David, the fulfillment of prophecy in the life of Jesus, stated in the context of the Hebrew Aramaic tradition and languages, and Jesus' demonstration of his divinity and his predictions of events yet to come. I have reviewed some of the major quotations and events that are unique to St. Matthew's Gospel, and closed just moments ago with a discussion of Jesus' lecture on the meaning of judgment based on works, pointing out how sharply this contrasts with the expectations of the Pharisees, who had been strongly criticized in chapter 23 just a day earlier. Next time, in episode 7, I will begin our examination of the Gospel of St. Mark. I thank you for joining me for episode 6 in the Holy Bible, the New Testament. While you're on the website, I invite you to visit the digital library page for our on-demand podcast and videocast archive, the bookstore page for information about all our publications, and a live link to our e-store at our Podbean site, www.stjohnc.podbean.com, and the Anglican Hour page, which offers links to our program archive of current and previous series. Producing these programs requires both time and money. You can support this internet ministry in two ways. You can make a direct donation by sending a check in any amount, payable to St. Chrysostom Church, to our business office address, 7162 Softwind Lane, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23111. That's 7162 Softwind Lane, three words, Mechanicsville, Virginia, 23111. Or you can purchase books from our bookstore or the e-store at our Podbean site mentioned just a moment ago, www.stjohnc.podbean.com. At that site, go to the bookstore page and you can order any book using PayPal. If you'd like to speak with me in person about this program or on any other subject, please call on my church cell phone, 804-306-1190. If you do not reach me, please leave your name, a message, and a callback number. Until next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be merciful to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. Amen.